Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Comedy Film Nerds Podcast.
Episode 270.
Man, every week I look at the number and go, holy shit, that's a lot. We've done 31 spoiler episodes, so we've already done over 300 episodes.
It's not including some of the live ones or the premium episodes.
We're probably at about a little less than 310.
Yeah, it's a lot. And we've got a lot to talk about today. We're going to be talking about some obscure movies that we want you guys to know about, like The Battered Bastards of Baseball.
Yeah.
In addition to The Forger, Tomorrowland, and some really offensive movies on DVD and Blu-ray this week that we'll be talking about as well.
Oh, God. The Loft. That's right. I saw.
Oh, no. And Seventh Son.
Oh, God.
It's like, you know, DVDs are just trying to kill you.
Well,
this week.
We put Joe in there just to shake it up.
But it did, yeah. But that didn't come out this week. But we had to palate cleanse.
We had to put something in that section so it doesn't offend. The PDF doesn't blow up.
Yeah. So we have one thing we wanted to announce to you guys too. We mentioned it before, but we have a Amazon affiliate now that we've put on the homepage. So if you go to comedyfilmnerds.com and you're going to be buying something from Amazon anyway, definitely please go through there. The other thing you could do is if you click on the little Amazon link in the top right and make that kind of like your Amazon homepage, then you don't even have to worry about it. You could just every time you go to that Amazon page, you know you're an affiliate for us, and we'll get a little taste.
Yeah,
and we've been enjoying what you guys have been buying.
They're telling us
a lot of wrestling action figures that you guys are buying, which is fantastic.
Is that Sean Merrick?
Yeah.
Is that our old former intern Sean Merrick who's big into wrestling? Yeah.
So we are enjoying your purchases.
Keep buying weird shit on Amazon, you guys.
Just so you know.
Our fans really like doilies.
Yeah.
What? I don't care. Yeah. They're good.
Somebody bought rope, twine, and duct tape, which didn't seem weird at all.
Oh, that's... Yeah. And lime and a shovel.
Keep the lime and a shovel out. You're just a hobbyist.
So just so you know, we don't know. It just gives us what's being bought, not who's buying it.
No, we don't know. We don't know who. But if you guys are out there storing bodies, we don't need to know.
No, just buy everything you need through Amazon.
Yeah, it helps the site out. You really help the show. If you're going to spend you're not spending extra money.
Do your part, psycho.
Yeah. Weird a human part farmer or whatever you're... Saw 5 movie enthusiast.
I'm planting toes today.
Yeah, there you go. Go plant toes. We appreciate it as long as you use
your hitchhiker jerky.
Yeah,
you
know? Hitchhiker jerky. Oh, we got to tell this story. Oh. So we, have we introduced our guest?
No, let's introduce our guest.
I'm just chiming in, sorry.
No. He's been on it was about 3 years ago, maybe you did the show. Longtime friend. We performed together a bunch. Mr. Gary Brightwell.
Hey, thanks, man.
So Gary and I in March were on a tour of military bases. Gary, you hooked me up with this Comics on Duty.
Right. Yeah. And this was all Air Force bases throughout the whole month of March.
Oh, is this the tour where you only flew at 4 a.m. in the morning?
Yes, exactly. Yes. It was the dumbest flight times imaginable.
Different airlines. And I was just like, you guys are killing me. Like, just give me the money. I'll book it. I'll pay extra. I don't care. Like, we had a... Oh, so the shows, of course, were great. Yep. But you're going to these towns like Altus, Oklahoma, and Great Falls, Montana, and Minot, North Dakota,
and
like Grand Forks. And we drove from Grand Forks to Minot. So you fly in, and on all the tours, it was me and Gary and Danny Viapondo, and then there was a different fourth guy on each one.
Right.
So one time it was Paul Ogata, who I'd never met. Like Danny and Paul and all these other guys I'd never met before. I've known Gary for a long time. So that was really cool. And the trips are a lot of fun. Like, I mean, it's like you're getting up early and, you know, we're comedians, so we're making fun of everything. But it's a lot of fun. We're in the car.
Yeah. You forget about it. It's like you've gone back to those road days of getting in the car with another comic and being on the road for 3 days or whatever it is. So it's – but now we've all done that already, and now it's like revisiting it, and we're still having fun, and we're all headliners in our own right. So it's like, you know.
So how did we get to Hitchhiker Jerky from there?
Well, this is Paul Ogata. You drive through these towns, and literally – they're a block long, and there's nothing.
Right.
And we're all making jokes like, oh my God, like, what do you do here? Like, how do you, you know, what, I mean, the one time we were stuck in Altus, Oklahoma, and they had an Applebee's and a Walmart, and that was like
downtown.
That was the, yeah. That was amazing. That was, we went to, we were stuck in, there was, they were snowed in. So we ate at Applebee's like twice. And that was like the most amazing meal.
Yeah.
So, and the people are really nice and everything, but you're in these towns sometimes, you're like, God, you drive through the parts of America and you're like, holy shit, like this is in the middle of nowhere. And we were making jokes like, God, how do you live here? And Paul Ogata goes, I don't think it would be bad to live here. You know, you'd get a nice little house over there and then eat hitchhikers. Paul Ogata, I never met before. He's a funny dude. He's been doing it forever. He's from Hawaii and he just has this deadpan. Mm-hmm. And we all just start fucking laughing.
Right. And then it got to where it's like, we were driving. And to me, I always would see, you see a farm. And then they have like a barn, and then right next to the barn, they have like a dilapidated farm, a barn that's about ready to fall over any moment. I kept thinking, why do you keep that crappy one? And then Graham says, that's where you keep your hitchhiker meat.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, and then either Paul or Danny goes, yeah, it's great hitchhiker jerky. And then it was like, it
turned into everything.
It was all this hitchhiker jerky. So. You know,
well, that answered the question.
Yeah. So go to Amazon and buy some hitchhiker jerky.
I
want to say real quick. Yeah. I just want to thank everyone that came out. I did a Doug Loves Movies in Dallas, Texas, at Hyenas, which was a lot of fun. And now this has happened multiple times. I do Doug's show, and in the middle of the show, he goes, "Oh, Graham, you should whistle." So I have an insanely loud whistle.
Yes,
I do it. And then I get all this shit on Twitter, like, shut the fuck up, Graham, you blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, Doug said Graham's going to whistle. So I do it, and then people get mad. So if there's any Doug Loves Movies listeners to this show, I try to move the microphone away. I don't want to blow out anybody's eardrums. But what?
But if Doug's going to request it,
Doug said you
he's
should,
the host.
Right, he's the whistle, and I started doing this loud siren. And Doug's doing it with me. But all I hear on Twitter is, I'm the dick.
Well, maybe that's Doug's insidious plan.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure he's laughing every time he
slowly take you down episode by episode.
As you're whistling, he's going into the microphone. Make sure you give Graham shit on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm sorry if I hurt any of your ears. And I'm sure if you listen to this show, you don't hate me. I'm guessing.
But so
I have an automatic block policy on Twitter. When someone says something truly assholey, automatic block. Automatic block.
Let's get into these movies. I really want to talk about Tomorrowland.
All right. You went to the big crazy El Capitan.
Made it an event.
Sure.
Made an event.
Yeah.
Whole family.
Went down. Got our tickets in advance. Got the VIP seating where you get the popcorn and the drink and the little Tomorrowland. You get the pin.
Do they bring it to you, or you have to stand in line?
You got to stand in line. Okay. Too. Yeah, they didn't bring it to us, unfortunately.
What kind of animals?
And then there's
what kind of savagery are they subjecting you to?
And what I love about these old theaters is there's 100 curtains that go up from the screen.
Right.
You know, there's always like, oh, well, that has to be the last curtain. Nope, there's one more that goes up, and then they show the trailers, and then they close the curtains again, and then a magic show started. So kind of themed like with Tomorrowland. And let me just say, could have done a little bit better with the magic show.
Who was the guy? Do you know his name?
I don't remember who it was, but
I know magicians.
It was a magician that
I worked at the Comedy Magic Club, so I know all kinds of.
Chances are you know him because he looked like he's been doing it for about 100 years.
Okay.
So, you know, you're still doing the card with the dots on it, flipping it back and forth. I mean, tricks that I saw as a kid,
right?
That you're still seeing. I'm like, no, you. You know, hey, magicians, step it up a little.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's, you know, and they did a couple, like, cool kind of Tomorrowland, like, big prop magic things where, you know, the big pin appeared and stuff. But ultimately, it was a bit of a thrown-together magic show that didn't really add to the experience. But then nobody cared. The magic show was over, then the movie actually started. Now, I was really looking forward to this movie, and I will say this is one of those weird movies that's got a lot of pedigree kind of behind it. Brad Bird, the director, did Iron Giant. I think even one of the Mission Impossible movies. And you've got George Clooney in it. And you've also got, you know, one of the writers from Lost. And You could see in this movie, this movie...
Brad also did Ratatouille.
Yes. Yeah, he's an animation director, but then branched off into live action.
He did The Incredibles.
Yeah, I mean, some great, great films.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, he did Ghost Protocol.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm watching this movie, and I'm thinking to myself, parts of this movie are kind of a mess, and parts of this movie are really amazing. There's some amazing scenes in this film. And other parts, you're like, oh, what are they doing? Like, what? This is taking too long to get to where I want to go, to actually get to Tomorrowland. The first part of it was just way too long, too much setup. And you also saw some kind of, like, notey stuff, like we need to get George Clooney in the movie earlier. So, like, there's this weird, like, voiceover where he's talking into the camera at the beginning that you don't need at all, at all. You just want to actually get to the story and have it start moving. But... there's some crazy big science fiction ideas in this movie. There's some great animation that starts the movie off. You know, Brad Bird, I'm sure he did that animation. And there's also a really compelling story, especially with George Clooney's character, about how as a kid he was like this inventor, you know, sky's the limit. And he becomes this disillusioned adult where it's such an amazing character, like especially to see like in a family film. I thought it was fantastic. There's some great scenes that you see in the trailer, like with the robots coming after people, and there was some interesting violence, a little more violent than I thought. You definitely see some people get killed. And the big idea at the beginning that's set up is what I absolutely loved, where you try to create this utopian future, and that's what Tomorrowland was, all the bright, the best and the brightest. But ultimately, money... corporations, any of those type of things will ultimately ruin it. And the idea and the dream basically fell apart. And this is the setup of the movie. This is not a spoiler. This is at the beginning of the film. So I love this premise, and I love the way some of it played out. But there were other parts where, like, well, this is taking too long. This is too slow. This didn't match. It was one of those movies where, even because of its flaws, I still really liked it. Even though, like, against my better judgment, like, well, maybe I shouldn't like it as much. But... Brad Bird and George Clooney, and it had such charm to it and such innovative and imaginative imagery, especially when they recreated the World's Fair. It was like I was able to overlook those flaws more than I normally would be able to. So it's a really good movie, but it could have been a classic. It could have been like this is the kind of movie I would love to see a director's cut on. Like how the movie was originally envisioned, but since it's a family movie from Disney, you'll probably never see that.
I saw it last night, and
wow.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it's disappointment, like when you go to Tomorrowland at Disneyland and Space Mountain is closed for repairs.
Right. There's a little bit of that.
Yeah.
I didn't like completely dislike it.
Mm-hmm.
I shared a lot of that, Chris. I think of like there was parts of it I liked and parts of it that were mess. The mess parts, I was just kind of like, man.
It's just too slow getting going.
It's so slow. I didn't have a problem seeing George Clooney in the beginning in the sense that it set up a really interesting thing. And again, this is all in the beginning of the setup.
Right.
Because he said, you know, the future when I was a kid was hopeful.
Right.
Now it's not.
Right.
Now it's like droughts and the polar ice caps are melting and all this
crime,
you know, there's
and violence,
crime, there's disease. Wars on every, there right. was, it was like, we thought of the future back then as like, it's going to be amazing. And now it's like,
and that was the purpose of the World's Fair. That was what, this is what the future is going to look
64.
Like.
And that's why they built Tomorrowland.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a cool premise.
It tapped into a lot of cool things.
Which is a really cool thing, and it's like, because that's all you hear about. There's all these doomsday movies coming out,
right.
and everyone's talking about it and all this stuff. I mean, California, we're in a 4-year drought.
Right.
The governor last month said, the days of the green lawn are over. So we got to do all these changes and stuff like that. So it was really interesting to acknowledge that and to not just, you know, cute Disney like it's not happening.
Like whitewash.
Just, fine. Everything's great. You know, Tinkerbell will save the day, you know. So that was cool. But, you know, I happen to be in a theater with really comfortable chairs.
Right.
And I fell asleep for part of it.
Right. I'm sure it was towards the middle of the beginning.
I mean, it was just like.
Because the act one literally felt like an hour.
It took forever, man.
Yeah, to get going.
But there is. there is cool things to it. And I was curious to see, because after the movie, I went, oh, it's a good kids movie. Mm-hmm. It's a kids movie.
Right.
That has some adult stuff in it.
Right.
But it is a kids movie for sure. And so I was curious to know, like, what
My kids both loved it.
Of course. Yeah, well, they really liked then it. In that sense, it's good. Mm-hmm. Then the movie's fine, and it doesn't matter what I think. But
well, I don't know. I think it's with his pedigree, like with Brad Bird, and what they do is they do more family movies where they're for everyone. Like,
right.
Like, and I really think this was a little bit of studio kind of, you know, there has to be more cutesy kid stuff in it. And it felt forced in.
This is a Disney product.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? And that's what I felt like they were going up against, because like The Incredibles is an amazing film.
Yes.
It has such great messages. It's fun. It's got great action.
Look at Iron Giants the same way.
Same way. Yeah. And I felt the same way. Like, God, I love Brad Bird. Mm-hmm. And I really like George Clooney, but they were doing the best they could.
In this framework.
In this
big
corporate Disney framework.
So when you look at it like that, some of the more adult stuff that did slip through, you wonder how some of that actually got through.
Mm-hmm.
Like you know, kind of the big, you know, mutually assured destruction of the entire world ideas kind of stuff. And also, but you know, you see people getting killed right on screen.
Mm-hmm. Huh?
And so. I loved what they did with the robots too. You see this in the trailer, just like the android humanoid robots, and how George Clooney is like one big death trap for robots.
Yeah.
It was so much fun and so cool.
It's and like you said, visually, I loved how they depicted actual Tomorrowland.
Yes.
The 64 fair was great.
That was amazing. And that just to see, like, you know, it's a small world and all those cool things that they did with it, like back in the fair and kind of tied into the movie. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
So I think I was a little more forgiving on it than you were, but it's one of those movies that it's a little messy, but I think the charm overall kind of still got me. I still liked it.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I would agree with that. All right, let's go to, what did you see, Gary? The Forager?
I saw The Forager recently.
Forager, not a forager.
Yeah,
yes.
It's with John Travolta plays an art forager who
finds art in the forest.
Yes. Exactly.
Chris can't get away from this forest concept. He really wants
to. I want there to be a forager in this movie.
Some sort of woodland character with special powers.
Of art.
His art powers.
Well, I don't know. But
Hashtag maybe, paint it.
Yeah. Maybe they're trying to find a good story. Maybe that's what they were trying to do. It's with John Travolta plays an art forger who is in jail who deals with a crime boss to bribe a judge so he's able to get out of jail 10 months early so he can spend time with his son who has an inoperable brain tumor.
Okay.
And to pay back the crime boss, he has to forge a famous Monet painting.
Okay.
And then, but not only just have that as his payment, but he also has to steal the actual Monet painting and replace it with, so it's like extra.
Okay.
It's like, it's not enough that I can
now I have to paint a perfect, too?
Now I have to do a heist. Well, to help him with his heist, thank God, his father,
played by Christopher Plummer.
Christopher Plummer happens to be that kind of person who would help you. Pull off a heist.
He's the Pink Panther.
That's their family that heists together. Yeah. Chris stays together.
Yeah. So it was, you know, and in the middle of that, they're still trying to shoehorn in a father getting to know his son in the middle of a heist movie.
Let's just say an older father getting to know an older son.
Right. And then the Christopher Plummer's character realizing that he wasn't as quite as good a father to John Travolta. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's wait a minute, now he told him how to do a heist. I mean, how bad of a beast can the guy be? You know what I'm saying? Like,
you don't just learn to be a forger on your own.
You know what I mean? That sounds like some good father-son bonding time.
Somebody bought him his first paint set.
Like,
they don't show you that, though. There's no story on how he became such a good artist. There's that you're just supposed to just accept that he's in jail. And now he's a great artist, and I don't know. It was like it seemed like there was too many things. They were trying to do too many things where they just could have had a, you know, could, you know, you didn't have to shoehorn in the cancer and the, you know, and the,
right,
the, you know, I'm not a good father thing. It just, I'd rather just see the
make
heist.
Make it a heist movie.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, the best heist movies are just, there's a little backstory in there. There's a little character stuff. But for the most part, they're just heisting. It's just like, that's, and that's what you.
Yeah, they're just heisting.
They're just heisting shit.
I mean, there's a little.
Like rollerblading. They're just heisting.
They're just heisting. That's all you want, a little heisting.
Can I just get some heisting going on?
That's all I want. I just want some heisting.
A little heisting.
I just
I don't need it to feel good.
I just need a scoop of ice cream. I don't need a lot of nonsense on it. I don't need it on toast or whatever.
Your father was into heisting. Your mother was into heisting. And by God, you're going to be into heisting.
Heisting or go home. You either heist in this family.
All right.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. The thing is, and this is.
I don't want to say, you know, I watched it all. I didn't like stop it in the middle and go, this is stupid. I sat through it, and it just kind of went along, and I was it filled the time.
Right.
But there's nothing. I was like, you know, when that got done, I was like, that was a great movie. Yeah, it wasn't that. That didn't happen to me.
It was just filler.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It killed the hour and a half.
It was an airplane
2 hours
movie.
That I needed to do. Yeah, it's an airplane movie. Perfect.
Right. You'd watch it on an airplane and go, oh, great.
All right, now I'm 2 hours closer to my destination.
Right, I'm going to be landing soon, and there you go. I'm going to get free food at the club and then do my skits.
After that, I'm going to do a little heisting for fun.
I'm going to go do some heisting. I love heisting after a comedy show.
Yeah. No, it really gets the blood pumping.
Folks, but when you get somebody like a Christopher Plummer, though, don't you want to like really use him?
Yeah,
more? You would think.
Yeah,
sure.
That's a great example. Like, he's one of those guys you would. I mean,
let's hire Jackie Chan and not have him do any martial arts.
Yeah, yeah. Let's just have
right,
him work
exactly.
in a store.
Yeah,
and but you know, because to go to like a family heist movie, go to God, is it, what is the one with Sean Connery and Dustin Hoffman? Is it The Family or the? And Matthew Broderick. You know,
Sean Connery, Dustin Hoffman,
Matthew
Broderick.
There's no way this is like a movie that
everyone, you made that up.
No. You guys, when I say the name, you're going to go, oh, you're not going to look at me and go, what a fucking weird.
Yeah, right. I kind of do. Yeah, I want to see that.
Family Business.
Family Business, okay.
Oh, okay.
1989, directed by Sidney Lumet. Hmm. There's an example.
His best film.
His best film. Okay, not Sidney Lumet's best film, but it's still a good movie. Mm-hmm. And I think it has all of the things in it that you wanted the Forger to have.
What was the one
like with Matthew Broderick?
Yeah.
You want Sean Connery going, oh, what a parasite. He says about Matthew Broderick's girlfriend. Who is played by Victoria Jackson from Saturday Night Live. Oh, wow. It's great. But that's what you want. And the relationship between Dustin Hoffman and Sean Connery is this great father,
right,
son heisting relationship. It's very heistful.
Family heisting.
Family heisting.
It's a new genre.
It is.
Yeah, family heisting.
Family heisting. So it sounds like Gary's saying you should watch Family Business instead of The Forger.
So it sounds like this is a remake.
I'm going to go. I would go. I might have to go back and revisit that.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen that one.
You should watch it.
Okay.
It's good. It's solid. It's a young Matthew Broderick and Dustin Hoffman. And Sean Connery is the dad, or he's Matthew Broderick's grandfather, who, you know, just gets out of jail and he's a career criminal. And Dustin Hoffman's wife, Dustin Hoffman has gone legit.
Right.
And so his wife is like, I don't want you back in that life. And they go back in that life and...
For one last time?
For one last score or something like that. And
then he's out.
Yeah. And then Matthew Broderick, you know, gets hemmed up and things go awry. And it's a good... And Matthew Broderick and Dustin Hoffman their relationship is interesting. It's a good
All right.
Check it out, Family Business.
Okay. There's more to it than say like a De Niro. Oh, that was a good movie. What was that one? Robert De Niro and why can't I pull the guy's name? American History X.
Edward Norton.
Yeah, Ed Norton. That one. What was that?
Yeah, with that was with this is horrible. We just keep doing
Brando was in
Brando
that.
Was in that.
Yeah.
That is where is that?
Oh, The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Perfect. Little Fockers? Is that it?
Yeah. Is it?
Where is that?
So, well,
The Score. The Score. 2001, The Score.
Yeah.
Directed by Frank Oz.
That was good.
Yeah, that is interesting. And then again, it's a heist. That's all you want in your heist movie. Just little intrigue, a little bit of backstory, but not much.
You know, like The Italian Job.
Exactly.
You know, you've got a heist, but you've got little tiny cars driving through small alleyways.
That's all you need.
That is all you need.
Little tiny Italian heisting cars.
All right.
So The Forger.
So let's talk about you guys saw a movie, The Battered Bastards of Baseball, and this was a documentary. Now it's funny, when Graham, you were telling me about it, I was like, what? That sounds like a made up story, but it actually exists and happened.
So did you tell me about this movie, Gary?
I did. I heard about it on Jimmy Pardo's podcast, Never Not Funny.
Right.
And so he said, oh, it's great. If you're a baseball fan, you're really going to enjoy this. So I was like, I'm a baseball fan.
And you told me, because someone told me, and I couldn't remember who. Now I remember. It was on that road trip going to one of those Air Force bases, and
right.
We were just talking, and you're like, you got to see this.
Yeah.
You were eating Hitchhiker jerky.
We're eating hitchhiker jerky.
And you were talking
Mountain
about
Dew.
Baseball.
Mountain Dews and hitchhiker jerky. And we were just on the road going gig to gig. So I'll just read you the IMDb. The Battered Bastards of Baseball is one of baseball's last great unheralded true stories. In 1973, Hollywood veteran Bing Russell, Kurt Russell's dad, who was played Deputy Clem on Bonanza, created one of the last independently owned minor league baseball teams in Portland, Oregon.
That is not affiliated with any major league baseball team.
Right. So yeah, to give you some,
there's no farm. So it was no farm. It wasn't a farm system that would feed players to the major leagues.
Yeah. So anybody listening who's not familiar with baseball, or if you live in another country, or in the American baseball system,
we call it cricket.
Takes 5 hours. It's in an oval. But no, like you have a team like the New York Yankees, and then they have several. There's three levels. There's AAA, AA, and Single A.
Right.
So AAA is obviously the next. They're the closest to going to the major leagues.
Right.
So each baseball club, the Dodgers, the Chicago Cubs, and they have these minor leagues, and it's their farm system. So they, what happens is a team like the Los Angeles Dodgers recruits a kid out of high school or college. And then you're going to start playing in single-A ball in some small town. And then if you do well, you keep working your way up. And the hope is that then this kid is going to be good enough to be brought up to play in the major leagues.
Right. But you also have different kind of leagues, right?
You've got all kinds of leagues all over the country,
right,
that have all these teams. So
you have like an American League, a National League. Like how?
Well, there's
like the movie Bull Durham is the example of a minor league.
That's a real team, the Durham Bulls.
The Durham Bulls, yes. But yeah, but they're a farm system to,
right,
I think the Atlanta Braves, maybe.
Maybe like I'm that. But yeah, so there's minor leagues all over the country. There's an East Coast League, there's a Southern League, there's the Grapefruit League, there's a Midwest League. Like Michael Jordan, when he played for the White Sox, when he retired from basketball and decided to play baseball, he played for the Chicago White Sox, I think Double A team,
the Barons
in Birmingham, Alabama, which is the Southern League. So that's where he played. Now there's a PCL, like the Pacific Coast League, is the West Coast minor league, and they had a team in Portland that nobody saw and went to, and they left.
Yeah.
And that's when Bing Russell,
Major League pulled the plug on, yeah, that team.
Mm-hmm.
Said, no, we don't need that. We can split the players up between two other teams and just and they, so they basically pulled baseball from this little town.
Right.
So it's a complicated system of tiers, basically, right. baseball in this country.
Right. And that's part of the story is Major League Baseball is this big business, this mm-hmm. big corporate entity. And part of this story is so cool is Bing Russell fought them.
Yes.
Because he created this single A team, so it had no affiliation, so he had no draft picks, he had no...
He put an ad in the paper.
Yeah. It had open
tryouts. Do you play baseball?
Right.
Come on out and try out for
now,
this team.
I don't want you to give any spoilers away, but there, one question I have immediately is, you create an independent baseball team, how do you find anyone to play with?
Well, no, here's what he went in a league and said to the people in that league, and there's a great interview with the guy that was running the league at the time in the 70s and said, I want to join your league. And they're like, all right. And he bought the team. He goes, you can buy this team in Portland for $5,000 and you're in our league now. So his independent team was playing against all of these minor league teams that were financed by the big teams. So that's what he played against them. So that's what's so he's playing against, and that was part of it, is he, like Gary said, he put an ad in the paper.
And got guys that, you know, that couldn't make open tryouts for, mm-hmm. you know, for Major League Baseball, the farm systems there. And they were just, but they still were guys that just could play and wanted to play, but Major League Baseball, those scouts might not have seen them in the same light and thinking, there's no way this guy can fit into our thing. So they're out. Now they get another chance to play for another team, and their whole deal is they just want to beat these guys. They're not playing for anything. Maybe I can move up. We're just going to play and beat you.
And the great thing is you got these, and it's the 70s. It's all these cats with this long hair and these Fu Manchu and just big mutton chop sideburns and beards. And they're all like in their late 20s or 30s.
Yeah, they got like concrete businesses. Yeah. But they also go out on the weekends and play
ball. And they were like, oh, we got $500 a month for 3 months of baseball or something crazy like that. And then, you know, Kurt Russell is interviewed a lot because
He played.
He played for the team. His dad was a baseball guy. His dad, Bing Russell, like, at 9 years old, was a ball boy.
The coach's dad's always gets in the game.
I was the coach's dad.
Because usually the coach's son.
Yeah, coach's son always gets to play.
Because his fundamentals are almost better. Because he's been in the backyard with the old man since the time he was two.
Right.
You know what I mean? These great interviews with Kurt Russell, and he's like, I'm 19 years old, and I'm getting to play baseball. And there was one pitcher that was in the major leagues, was a big-time pitcher, and got kicked out or something.
Probably blew his arm out or something and rehabbed it. I don't remember. Right?
And he had written a tell-all book, and everyone in major leagues was pissed at him. So he comes in, and these guys are like, holy shit, we're playing with this guy. And the movie, man, it's first of all, it's a very well-made documentary. I think Netflix produced it.
Right.
So they've got great interviews. They've got great, you know, either 8 or 16 millimeter, either home or news footage from the 70s. Then they've got local TV interviews from like 1973 in Portland, Oregon. And they're playing at Civic Stadium. Now Civic Stadium is right in Portland, and they have now converted it to, I believe it's where the Portland Timbers of the Major League Soccer play. And it's this awesome soccer vibe. But I remember going to a game there when my mom moved there when I was a freshman in college, and so I spent a summer there between my freshman and sophomore year. And I remember my brother and I, there was a Minnesota Twins organization that played there. And I remember we went, you know, and you spent $3 or whatever, or $5, and you watched minor league guys play. The cool thing about this story was Bing Russell was all about the fans, and he knew baseball. And
it's a lot about him building a following back up, you know, because baseball was basically taken away from this little small town, and that's all they really, really enjoyed.
Right.
What was the real, like, does it go into like the beginning? What was the real reason? Was it to Because he had a love of baseball to revitalize the town. Like, what was the?
It was the love of baseball. When he was 9 years old, they lived in Florida or something like that, and he was a bat boy for the Yankees during spring training, and he's got home footage and photos of him with like Mickey Mantle and
Great.
So he's 9 years old, and so they kept saying he understood baseball. And he moved out to Hollywood, and he started working in the pictures. You know, Kurt Russell said something like, "My dad was killed on screen 127 times," or something like that.
Right.
You know? But he always loved baseball. Hmm. Always in the backyard playing it. Always went to games.
Right. And the movie basically shows how he rebuilt a following for this ragtag, to use that corny phrase. But he's like a marketing genius, and he builds a huge following to where to a point that Major League Baseball can't kind of blow him off. And so they want to buy back in.
This is where the story gets. We won't spoil it.
This is
where it gets interesting, because he then starts breaking attendance records.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And it became a thing. Like, the city of Portland was like, this is our team, because none of these – because here's the thing about minor league baseball. It's hard to, like, follow the team because guys are getting called up. They're getting – like, so you just sort of – and I know plenty of towns that have a good minor league baseball team, and the city comes out, but they just come out – I mean, like, they like it, but they're not rooting – specifically for players.
Because they know they're not going to be there.
Mid-season, they could get yanked up, whatever.
They start playing well, then you don't see them anymore.
Guy's gone.
Because they go up to the bigs. Wow. You know,
so, but these guys weren't going anywhere.
Right. There was nowhere for them to go.
There was nowhere for them to go, and they were, you know, they were outcasts, and they were freaks, and it's just, you know, you see them in the locker room, the photos of the movies in the after locker of the games, and they're all in bell bottoms and no shirts, drinking beers and smoking cigarettes. You know, it's the 70s.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just like, it's a great story. And you don't have to be, if you're a baseball fan, you got to watch it.
Right. And if you're not, it's still a good story of the little guy.
It's a great story of the little guy and like Portland.
Great.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Check it out. The Battered Bastards of Baseball. It's on Netflix.
Okay. So now, Gary, we were talking earlier. You like courtroom dramas.
I do.
And you were talking about specifically 12 Angry Men, which is a classic film. And the thing I always loved about that film was the setup. You know, you've got 12 people in a jury, but you also have this setup of like...
the movie... directed by Sidney Lumet.
Yes, his worst film.
His worst film. 12 Angry Men is a bag of shit.
He was just biding his time for that Sean Connery
vehicle. Yeah, that happened 20 years later, 30 years later.
What I loved about this movie, I mean, I loved the whole movie, but what I loved about too was the setup. You have these jurors in this room. You know they're all going to be in there together, but the way they set up the case, like, was this is an airtight case. Obviously, everyone's convinced, you know, there's a murder weapon. Everything's, like, completely airtight. And then there's just that one doubting juror. And then what I love about it is that everything slowly kind of unravels and gets picked apart. But that's not the whole story. The whole story is also how every different personality in that room reacts to it.
Right.
So I find it's if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out, 12 Angry Men. And it's also a great, from a filmmaking standpoint, a great example of what's called a compressed time movie and also a very limited location movie. Like, everything happens within a short period of time, the entire film, and also in, I think it's just, one or two locations. It's like the courtroom and the jury room. That's it.
Well... and also,
it's also, I mean, here's one thing about what I loved about that. When you go back and you watch it a couple more times, the fact that the weather plays a huge part in this. These people are, like I said, they're in this. Crazy hot. Yeah. And the fan doesn't work. And they're sweating. And we just want to get through this. Can't we just vote and put this guy in
jail? I've got tickets to something. Yeah,
exactly. There's just that. And there's that. That's an element you kind of, you know, when you first watch, you just kind of overlook, well, it's hot, you know. But then you go, wait a minute, this is really adding to why these people, you know, at the very beginning, let's just get the vote out and get out of here, you know, where I can get to where it's cool and get something to drink. And one guy says, no, we really could look into this. And yeah, so it's, I enjoyed that.
And there's also these great performances by Martin Balsam, Lee J. Cobb, E.G. Marshall, Jack Klugman, like Jack Warden, Henry Fonda. I mean, it's
quite a cast.
It's quite a cast, and it's black and white, and which I think plays into the sweaty,
yeah,
close quarter, tense, fucking,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like, and
how many women were on that jury?
None.
Exactly.
None. It also tells you the time frame.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. It's a really, it's based on a story by Reginald Rose, but I believe Rod Serling wrote the original for TV. I could be wrong.
Oh, that's some weird trivia. I haven't heard that.
Well, it was a TV movie. 12 Angry Men was a TV movie. Yeah, and then it was Reginald Rose wrote the original. Yeah, because I believe it was one of those. It was a TV movie on one of those live, like Playhouse 90 or one of those broadcast ones that Rod Serling wrote on.
I know years later they did a remake of it.
97, that was directed by William Friedkin. Yeah, that had Jack Lemmon and George C. Scott and
Tony Danza.
Yeah, Hume Cronin. Yeah, it's a different ballgame. but okay, let me ask you this. What are some of your other favorite courtroom dramas and why?
I loved The Verdict with Paul Newman, who was up, I believe he was up for an Academy Award. He was nominated, and he should have got it, and I don't remember who won.
Wasn't it the year of Gandhi?
Might have. I'm so bad with the dates and stuff like that.
It's 1982. Yeah, I think it was. He was up against Gandhi, and it was like, no way was...
Right.
Ben Kingsley was like, again, do you want to know who directed The Verdict? Mm-hmm. Little gentleman by the name of Sidney Lumet, folks. Did not know that today's episode was going to be a Lumet theme.
Who thought?
Read his book, by the way. Read Sidney Lumet's book about directing.
Family Business.
It's the family business. His grandfather was a prisoner, and then he directed movies in the joint. And no, but Sidney Lumet got a really cool book about it. It's not so much technical if you ever want to get into directing, but it's about the sort of emotion and how to deal. Like, he talks about different casts. He's like, well, I had to talk to this guy because he's a Broadway actor this way. This guy was a club comic. I had to talk to him this way. This person was from TV. I had to talk to him that way.
That's interesting.
But anyway, talk about The Verdict. Came out in 1982.
Yeah, I just think he was...
Listen, I'm sorry. Based on a novel by a guy by the name of David Mamet.
Yeah.
Oh, him.
That guy. So there's a couple people involved.
Well, I just remember him being up for the Academy Award and him not getting it. And they were like saying, oh, hey, how he was overlooked. And then I think was it the next year or the couple years after when he finally did win for Color of Money?
Color of Money.
And it's always been talked about where he should have won for The Hustler and didn't. And then he should have won for The Verdict and didn't. So this was, look, we got to give him one.
Yeah, Color of Money was sort of the like.
Yeah,
he was owed this. He was owed this,
right?
Because
exactly.
I mean, there was also there was a bunch of them. I mean, there was talk of him in The Sting. There was talk of him, Paul Newman. Let me see. Read some of the other ones here.
Because he only got one, right? He only got one for Color of Money, yeah. I believe.
There was absence.
And think about all the great movies he's been in.
Well, there was a bunch of them. Fort Apache, The Bronx. Absence of Malice.
That
was
a great about
that
one.
With Absence of Malice, where he plays the guy who's wrongly accused. Sally Field is in it. Sidney Pollack, of course, directed that. Like, so there was all these movies that Paul Newman had just gotten, he should have won for. You know what I mean? Like, he just couldn't ever quite.
That happens sometimes, like when you don't win and then all of a sudden you win for something. Well, that wasn't as good as those other ones that he did, but I feel like there's almost like a built up goodwill towards, well, we got to give him one now.
Look at this. Look at all these movies he didn't win for. Cool Hand Luke.
Right. Yes.
You know, like, oh, yeah.
Although, man. George Kennedy won in that.
Should have HUD?
HUD.
Supporting.
Yeah, for supporting, yeah.
I mean, so, but The Verdict, the thing I love about The Verdict is he's broken.
Yes, down and out.
Down and out, alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's given this, isn't he given this, he's kind of, this case gets thrown on him in his lap, thinking that he's not a good lawyer.
And that, yeah, it's given to him like, well, he'll sweep this under the rug.
Right.
And he goes, no.
Yeah.
And there's those great scenes with Jack Warden.
Yeah.
In the movie. And then he just finally, like, he's been a broken guy. He's like, isn't he in money trouble? Doesn't he kind of do some shady?
Yeah. There's a lot of.
Like, isn't him? I thought him hanging around trying to ambulance chase some cases and.
Right.
And then this thing comes across his desk and he's like, but it's wrong.
You know,
like he's kind of asked and he's like, I can't do this anymore.
Right.
And
they think he's, like you said, they think he's just going to brush it under the table and get.
He'll play
it.
Ball.
Yeah, exactly.
Give him some money and some booze.
And this is where he basically takes his stand.
Oh, it's such a great film.
Yeah, it was a good movie. Like that one. What else do I like?
Well, and if you want a little bit lighter, but still a courtroom drama, is My Cousin Vinny.
Another Academy Award winning film.
But if you look at it as, like, you know, how many lighter courthouse dramas are there, courtroom dramas, it really is one. When you look at especially the end, a lot of it takes place in the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it was, I think that was like one of the first, I mean, there aren't that many comedic courtroom dramas.
Yeah, I don't.
I mean, unless you count Three Stooges shorts. But I think that was one of the movies that kind of turned all these other movies on its ear, like kind of like, all right, well, we're going to make a funny version of, you know, these really serious courtroom dramas. And that's why I think it worked, because that movie could have easily been a flop and didn't work. But I think because it had this history of all these great courtroom dramas behind it,
right?
I think it worked as a comedy in a weird way. So, but that's also worth checking out if you haven't seen My Cousin Vinny, check it out. But of course, And Justice for All is another fantastic one if you haven't seen that.
Oh, And Justice for All. That one was Al Pacino.
Al Pacino, yes, in an amazing performance.
And Jack Warden.
Yes. You know, I know some of you younger listeners may see Al Pacino in things, and wow, he's kind of a parody of
like, he kind of turned into
into a parody of like what he used to be. But if you seek out his earlier work, is all I could say to you. If you see Al Pacino in some weird, crazy, over the top role, ignore it and go to his truly fantastic body of work. Go to And Justice for All, go to Serpico, go to all these other
Dog
movies.
Day Afternoon.
Dog Day Afternoon. Yeah. Go see the real Al Pacino.
Yeah.
And Justice for All is, again, one of those, and it's 1979, but it's in that vein of where, you know, America in the 70s and even in the early 80s, before like the Reagan years kind of took over, America had been sort of broken.
Right.
You had Watergate, you had Vietnam, you had the Kennedy assassinations, you had Dr. King assassinated, Martin Luther. So we were just sort of this broken, we started to get cynical for the first time.
Right.
And you see that in all of these great movies where it's like, And Justice for All, you know, he's a defense lawyer, but he's got to defend this judge who's on trial for rape. But if he doesn't, then the judge is going to disbar him.
Right.
And he's got to play ball in this dirty inner city corrupt cesspool without losing his own dignity. But it's just like, it's such of those dilemmas of morality and ethics that
podcasters go through all the time.
This horribly corrupt digital broadcast.
And that's the famous line too, doesn't it? Sir, you're out of order. I'm out of order. You're out of order.
This whole court's out of order.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's great Al Pacino stuff. Mm. Who's trying to be an honorable man in a shitty situation. Yeah, I would recommend that. I'd watch 12 Angry Men.
Yeah.
Then I'd watch...
Not the remake, to be clear.
Yeah, not the remake, the 57 one. Then I'd watch The Verdict.
Verdict. Mm-hmm.
Then I'd watch Injustice for All.
And then Family Business.
And then I still stand by it. I still stand by it. Family Business.
What was that other, the Travolta one?
Oh, Class Action.
Class Action, yeah. I like that. Robert Duvall is amazing.
Fantastic in that movie. He just had that really slow kind of creepy menace to it, yes. You know, and he's, you know, he's eating his lunch in like this corner of, he's like interrupted. And
the young kid.
Yeah, and he's like, oh my God, he's going to kill me.
Yeah. He quietly says, you know, and if self-preservation is a thing you hold dear, you will never interrupt me at this time again. You know, and it's just like, oh, this man's going to, he must have razor blades in the front of his boot or something like that. Like,
yeah. And that's a, it was a great example of like big business, you know, just wearing the little guy down, mm-hmm. going, look, we're just gonna kill you in a sea of paperwork, and it's just gonna cost you and cost you and cost you.
And isn't it, if I'm not mistaken, Class Action was based on a true story. John Travolta was playing an actual attorney.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think it was.
It's about an actual case.
Here, let's pull it up real quick.
Class Action.
And it's the movie too that
1991. No.
Oh no, it's not the Travolta one.
Class Action is Gene Hackman and Mary Elizabeth Mestre.
Yeah, it's a father and daughter that are on opposite sides of a case, and all their dirty laundry in the family becomes.
It's not
it's
an okay.
It's not bad. It's an okay movie. But
what is it?
It's not the John Travolta one. We're talking
about. Action.
A civil action.
Civil action. Yeah,
that's it. Oh God.
That was
a yeah. Well, put that on the time code. We'll edit that out. No, we're going to leave it in.
A civil action. You can hear us miss the movie for 30 minutes.
It's Travolta and Duvall. It's great.
Civil action.
You look that up.
It's Travolta and Duvall. What I loved about it, too, is the setup of his character where John Travolta is not going to take this case because there's no money in it. But then he sees the big corporate names on the trucks pulling out of the town. And then that's when he gets involved because he sees the parent companies have money.
Right.
But then it's a great story, too. Then, but check it out.
Is that Sidney Pollack? Because he's in it.
No, it's directed by Steven Zaillian, who directed. He's been a producer on a lot of big things. He directed All the King's Men, A Civil Action, and Searching for Bobby Fischer. God, I love Searching for Bobby Fischer.
Mm-hmm. But there's a great scene where Travolta's in talking with Sidney Pollack, plays a lawyer or something, mm-hmm. and. They go to his office, or they go to some fancy gentleman, not a gentleman's club, but like the Esquire club or something
some
like
rich
that.
Guy.
Yeah, where they sit around and they smoke cigars and drink fancy scotch. Yeah.
Oh, Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah. They go to the set of Eyes Wide Shut. That's exactly. Sidney Powell takes him there.
But there's a weird scene where he's like telling Travolta to take his shoes off and put his feet up on this glass table, and John's like, I don't want to. And it's such a weird, uncomfortable. Really interesting scene. I don't know why that sticks out in my head, but it's just.
But that's funny. What I think. What makes this movie great is there's all of these little great scenes like that with all these like William H. Macy is in it, Tony Shalhoub is in it, John Lithgow, like, and they all have the James Gandolfini plays one of the guys.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Dan Hedaya, like all these great character actors have all these great little scenes.
A little in meaty,
civil action
roles.
All right. So. Hashtag a civil, not
not class.
Not class. Action.
So now let's get to DVDs and Blu-rays. First, let's go to your pick before we get to the abominations being released this week. Joe.
Joe is this crazy movie. I just...
You know what was weird? You used Nicolas Cage and Not a Bad Movie in the same sentence.
It's Nicolas Cage is in this. And it's one of these things, we should really get Netflix as a goddamn sponsor because we promote the shit out of them so much.
Yeah, the problem is they, well, that's why no one has them as a sponsor.
Yeah, because they don't need to.
No.
So an unnamed online movies place with a big catalog, I was flipping through and saw this and was like, Joe. It came out in 2013. It stars Nicolas Cage. I'm like, what is this? And I'm like, what is this film? It doesn't make
Nick Cage and who plays the kid?
The kid is played, it comes out 2013. It's directed by David Gordon Green. The kid is played by Ty Sheridan. And it's really,
I think he's the same kid who has the tumor in The Forger. which was interesting. He was also in some movie called Mud, which I didn't.
Oh yeah, he's one of the kids in Mud. Yes. Yeah, he is.
Because they just kept saying, it was so funny to me. I was looking at his, because I'd never seen him before. And he's like, he's in Joe and Mud. And it's like, what other coffee slang Java. Coffee movie that he could be in?
Java. No, you're right. He is in The Forger. He's one of the kids in Mud. Well, I didn't realize that. Mud is a really cool movie. You know, that was one of those when Matthew McConaughey was finally starting trying to break out Killer Joe. Mud, trying to break out of his rom-com thing.
But now, what's Joe about?
Here's what Joe's about. It's a similar thing, and I think this was Nick Cage's attempt to kind of break out of this. He's been in all these horrible movies. He had tax trouble. He's saying yes to anything. An ex-con who is the unlikeliest of role models meets a 15-year-old boy and is faced with the choice of redemption or ruin. So Joe is Nick Cage is this guy. He's an ex-con. He's got this nice little business in this small town in Texas, you know, clearing trees or whatever. He's real honest, you know, honest day's work for an honest. He's doing okay, and finds this kid. The kid's dad is an alcoholic and abusive. And this movie, I was like, it's based on a novel by apparently Larry Brown. It was surprising. I was like, I kept going.
It was directed by Sidney Lumet.
came back from the grave to direct this. It was really unbelievable. So this guy directed The Sitter, Pineapple Express. Like, huh? That's what's weird. But he does a pretty good job. David Gordon Green, there's some gritty stuff, and
he's been around for a while, David Gordon Green.
I don't know if I know this for sure, but I got the real sense that he hired all of these like Texas character actors. Because I felt like I was in this small town. Like, wow. It was like all these gritty, like, Jesus, that guy probably is the goddamn sheriff of that town. And these guys look like they, you know, this one guy who's like his head, guy that, you know, runs the chain gang or whatever. It was just this guy with this thick accent and gold teeth, and you barely understood what he was talking about. But I was like, because that's, I bet you, how he actually talks, you know, like that's who he is. But there's all these great character actors. And there's these really gritty scenes. And man, there's a lot of like, ooh, there's these people are like awful, like the worst parts of humanity.
They make Hitchhiker Jerky.
Yeah, they make Hitchhiker Jerky in this small town. Yeah, that's what they do. It's a great place to get Hitchhiker Jerky. So it kind of caught me off guard. It's a good film. Okay. It's a good film. It's worth seeing.
All right, and then let's go to one that is not worth seeing, Seventh Son. I had the misfortune of seeing this actually in the movie theater. And if you want to see Jeff Bridges do a sketch character for 2 hours... a medieval sketch character, go for it. And this is also one of the things that's like, oh, we can't do new movies, no IPs. Guess what? This one based on a book and completely unwatchable. it's really fascinating. And it's got Julianne Moore in it, who plays a witch who can also turn into a dragon and some other great things where called a witch in the movie. Like, he has to fight the witches, but then one of them has an army of assassins. One of them just looks like a monster. One of them can turn into a monster. And one of them just looks like Genghis Khan. So it's really fascinating where I think what happened is, all right, what costumes do we have left? And then let's just dress everyone in whatever we have available. We'll call them all witches.
Maybe just like, hey guys, run into the costume barn and just help yourself.
See what you can find.
Ed Wood look at how to make them.
Yes. There were some.
What can I get my hands on?
Yeah. It really had the feeling of some foreign investors lost a lot of money. This is how this movie felt.
Like somebody just showed up. I got a Viking helmet and a bow up. Wear it. You're a witch.
Well, we've got $10 million to spend. You may as well use it. So it's a really, it's a fascinating failure. And
what a wonderful way to put that.
And the reason is because it looked like money was actually spent on the actual production. Like the special effects looked pretty decent. There were some wide sweeping shots and some wide sweeping sets. Where it fell flat was the writing, directing, and acting. So other than that,
so you're saying this is you're nitpicking a little bit. These
I'm
are
nitpicking a little bit. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you had a couple of cool character design, like creature designs, but don't expect anything that resembles a film. You know, if watch this.
Okay. So
but it really
don't go
like,
with big expectations.
No, and it really looked like Bridges was like, well, you know what? I'm getting paid. I'm in another country. No one's watching me. I'm going to do a weird action. Just talk like this, or you can't even understand me in the whole movie. And that's literally how he talked in the entire film. And it was like he almost needed subtitles. And it was weird because it was subtitles to hear dialogue I didn't want to hear anyway. So it was like, even if there were subtitled, I would have refused to read it. So like, it was so
the mumbling's
dumb.
More interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It was absolutely fascinatingly stupid. Like someone said, here's $200 million. Make the dumbest movie you possibly can. And someone went, okay. And they did.
Don't you wish you were that famous that you could just act in a movie? And you know, he just showed up on the set and just went, brilliant.
Oh,
do
that's
it.
Fantastic. Keep that.
No one's going to go, hey, what are you?
What are you doing? No one can understand
you. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Remember when I kept calling you before shooting, saying, let's have a meeting and talk about it, and you blew me off? Remember?
Yeah. Remember you didn't want to do a rehearsal? Remember that part? Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, because he knew. He goes, this is a piece of shit with foreign money. I don't care.
Yeah, I'm walking it in.
Yeah, that's so great. Well, speaking of another disaster, the movie The Loft had a limited theatrical release.
And a remake, too, of a foreign film.
A remake of a foreign film. It's worth watching in the sense that it makes zero sense. And the dumbest cliches.
Did anyone turn into a dragon?
Almost, it's all it needed. All it needed was a shapeshifter.
Right.
It's these like four or five wealthy, good-looking guys that decide to get a loft apartment so they can all have... They're all married. Mm-hmm. And they all want to cheat on their wives. And this is the... They're going to do it. Right. Mm-hmm. So then one day they find a body... are they being set up? Is one of the guys turning on the guys? Did the ex-wives find out? And you know what? Who cares? Does it matter? I don't care who done it. I'd rather figure out how to do better heisting.
Right?
It's
with my family.
With my family. I'd rather go heisting with my family than watch this. It's like, why, you know, seriously, go watch Battered Bastards of Baseball or Joe or, you know, then this nonsense. Yeah.
Or go see Tomorrowland and nod off periodically and wake up for the really cool scenes.
Get a nice nap between cool scenes.
That way you're really alert for the good part.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then, unless you want to just see how bad a movie can be, like, I think it's based on like it's a foreign film that they remade.
Yes.
So did they not know plot structure in this foreign country, or did?
Where was the original not bad?
The original pretty interesting and cool, and then these guys got a hold.
Yeah, they got a hold of it and ruined it.
Like I'd rather almost see
the original film.
Yeah. Or so, Jeff Bridges do an accent.
Or Jeff Bridges do an accent for 2 hours.
I read a loft.
By the power of Grayskull.
Who's in charge of the electricity bill?
We got to split this five ways.
I'm going to put it on the refrigerator.
Don't leave lights on in rooms you're not using.
This is my shelf, my food in the refrigerator.
Oh, we can split laundry detergent.
God. All that dialogue, far more interesting than was actually so now let's go to the site spotlight and the fan feedback. We got an interesting email from Grandma, have you read it, about chroming from Mad Max.
Okay, so we had this discussion. Gary, I don't know if you've seen Mad Max, but we did a spoiler ep on it, and we've had a bunch of great discussions. I had a discussion on it. I did Will Anderson's podcast, Fofop, and we talked about it, which is what this is. So in Mad Max, these crazy guys that are working for the bad guy would spray their face with like silver paint when they knew they're going to like sacrificed their lives.
As like an anointment. Like it was like a privilege to have this.
Okay.
Happen. Spray my face and I'm going to meet Valhalla. And then they would like do something to, you know, they sacrifice their own life to help the rest of the army or whatever. So we were theorizing on this show and on Will Anderson's show where that came from. We got a great email from Stephen Hansen, who's not related to the Milwaukee Hansen brothers, but maybe they are. But he's
but he runs a heisting and chroming factory.
He runs a heist Melbourne's heist and chrome. So if you're down in Australia, go to Melbourne's heist and chrome. Steve writes, "Hey Graham, big fan of Comedy Film Nerds, and I just listened to you on TOFOP." And where you and Will were theorizing about the Silver Spray, the War Boys, that's the name of the guys that are all bald that are kind of painted in white, sprayed in their own mouths. I have another theory to add to the pile. Chroming is a cheap and nasty way that people get a rush by spraying silver/chrome spray paint into a bag and inhaling. They are pretty obvious to spot as their mouth and nose are covered in chrome after. It can make people who use it want to do dangerous or crazy shit. So it could be that on one of his visits to Melbourne, George Miller, who directed Mad Max, saw a chromer who lived near me in West Melbourne, who I once saw holding up traffic on a major road as he was rollerblading down the center with a chrome mouth and nose, oblivious to his surroundings. Love your work. Can't wait to watch earbuds. All the best. I think this is the best theory.
Yeah, yeah. I think so too.
Because isn't it what like a good filmmaker would do, is they'd see something and kind of add it.
Yeah.
You know,
and give it like a religious connotation.
Yeah, like if these guys that are chroming just to get high today, after the apocalypse.
Right.
And Immortan Joe would use it as a way to control them too. Like it gives them a high and also asserts control over them.
Right. And you get someone hooked on something, you can absolutely control them. Just do this for this drug. And wouldn't also.
By the way, the villain, this is another trivia that a fan brought up. It's the same actor that was in the original Mad Max, the character that played Toe Cutter.
Really?
Yeah.
See, that kind of stuff's great. Mm-hmm. It's another, and I think this is a great theory, and I'd love to. I hope it's true because it just gives more credence to the fact that George Miller just brought in all these amazing details to Mad Max.
Well, also the other you saw on Twitter, all the other fans were saying, we said, "Where's the Thunderdome reference?" And someone said, "Well, his sanctum was a dome, the actual Thunderdome." So another great theory.
Great theory. Mm-hmm. I love all your guys' theories and all the emails and stuff you've been posting on the Facebook and the Twitter has been great. So Stephen Hansen, landscape architect and chrome heister.
Yeah.
thank you so much for your email.
Okay. And let's also Neil's Maggie review. I wanted to mention this. We may have mentioned it before, but this is, you know, when Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, he doesn't, like he said in that interview, he doesn't need to really promote the Terminator movie, but this one where, you know, his daughter's infected with the zombie virus, but he doesn't give up on her or send her to the zombie camp. He looks for a cure and tries to help her. And that's the kind of the low budget, slow burn journey of the film. And Neil really liked it. So it's a good, it's the kind of thing that Schwarzenegger needs to do more of.
Yeah.
To really branch
out.
It's
really intriguing.
As an aging kind of action star, really. Because that's, there's only certain roles that they can play anymore. But this is, but there's ways to make them cool. There's certain choices that you have that you could make that would be really interesting.
And does he need, I mean,
they need another Terminator movie?
Does he need another $50 million? Like, probably not.
And also, in development is another Conan movie.
Oh, that I'm down with.
But, yeah, I am too, actually. And with Arnold Schwarzenegger, they said.
Yes, of course.
It's going to be him, like, you know, years later.
The King.
Right, Conan the King. Uh-huh. So I am.
I hope they get that guy with a Viking helmet from Seventh Son.
Yeah.
That's what I'm really hoping.
Hey, Conan.
So we'll see what happens
Don't
with that.
Don't eat all of the Fruit Loops.
Let's see if it actually makes gets made.
All right, so coming out this week, San Andreas.
Yes.
Shaky camera.
This is, oh my God, this is great. If you want to see overpaid actors run from a green screen, this is the movie for you. The only thing that makes me really want to see this is I love The Rock. I do want to see it just for him, and I want to see him punch the earthquake. I just want to see him, just there's something's coming towards him, and he just punches the earthquake.
This guy.
But the trailers are so dumb and so overblown and overly dramatic and so ridiculous. I'm like, oh, God.
But it's the same director that did Cats and Dogs, The Revenge of Kitty Galore.
Oh, well, that explains everything. Sure. What a great choice, then, for a giant epic disaster movie.
And Journey 2, The Mysterious Island, he also directed that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Here's why I want to see it.
Mm-hmm. Here's the headline. The Fault is San Andreas. That's the big fault, is you going to see this.
That's awesome. Some entertainment writer has already done that.
They haven't even seen the movie yet. They've already, the lead is already written.
The negative is already in there.
I want to see it only because I remember as a kid watching the disaster movies, Earthquake.
The '70s ones.
Yeah, Towering Inferno, the airplane movies.
The Poseidon Adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to me, I'm like, I gotta see this.
And I think too.
And they're destroying San Francisco and L.A., which is like, you know, everyone always complains that New York and L.A. always get blown up.
California Dream. In that trailer, they got this weird, creepy, like version of the song. Like, really?
Well, this giant tidal wave comes and wipes it. I got to watch it. I'm going to see it.
So
I know it's going to be dumb. I know what I'm doing.
You know what's interesting is that every other studio...
That's your fault. I have no one to blame but myself. Yeah. I have no one to blame but myself.
Every other studio steered clear of this film.
Weird.
Like, there's literally... but you would think, this would be a good... time for a little counter programming. Somebody would want to maybe see something else, but no, clear the decks. That's
the
only thing.
There is Aloha is coming out.
Yeah, Aloha, but this is a low budget Cameron Crowe movie that I'm not very hopeful for.
It's one of those things where I watch the trailer and all the actors, I'm like, God, I like all these people. But then, like, some of the story points and some of the dialogue, I'm just like...
Let me just read you the IMDb line. A celebrated military contractor returns to the site of his greatest career triumphs and reconnects with a long-ago love while unexpectedly falling for the hard-charging Air Force watchdog assigned to him. I'm already bored, and I was just reading it.
I know.
So it feels like a weird kind of like, Cameron Crowe, what are you doing? His movies are really hit or miss. The thing about Cameron Crowe's films is it's a very small target. When he's in his zone, his movies are brilliant. They're absolutely fantastic. But when he goes out of that comfort zone, he's one of those directors that can't really stretch. Like, mm-hmm. it just ends up being kind of a mess. Like, Vanilla Sky, do you remember that movie?
Yes.
That was a Cameron Crowe movie.
Yes.
Then it was a creepy science fiction movie. Yeah. You just showed me two distinctly different films that were cut in the middle. So, and it was the kind of, and the other thing, too, is no matter what movie it is, whether it's that movie or, you know, even like We Bought a Zoo or whatever, the soundtrack is always an extra character. So when you saw it in Vanilla Skies, the soundtrack, another character, I'm like, it doesn't really work here. But, you know, his other movies, and of course, like Almost Famous, brilliant, fantastic movies.
So I guess you're saying this weekend, if you want to see, if you've seen everything that's already out.
Right.
You want to go to the movies. It's a coin toss on which type of stupid you're going to get.
Yeah, I think so.
Stupid rom-com or stupid The Rock punching an earthquake in the face?
Yeah, I might recommend checking out a film you might have missed over the last few weeks.
Okay.
You know, and you may want to steer clear of DVDs, too. This is like a dead zone for movies this week.
I just love a celebrated military contractor. It's like... He's not even in the military.
Those adjectives don't even go together.
Well, I'm assuming he's like a he probably was like special ops at one point, and now
and then
he
became
works
a contractor.
Yeah,
right.
But if you're special ops, you're anonymous. You're
right.
You go and undercover,
or is it just like contractor?
You celebrate. Like, your picture's on the paper.
And what is the, or is he like an actual contractor? Like, he came up with the Kevlar vest.
Yeah.
Sold a million of them to the military. Like,
right. Yeah.
You know, it's funny too.
He invented the HESCO bag.
I don't know if, I don't know if other countries have this, but when we use the term military contractor, it's a very broad term. It could mean many different things.
Sure. Yeah. Do you work for Halliburton? And
right.
You
exactly.
You worked at the Chow Hall.
Yeah.
Or in Basra.
Did you work for Blackwater?
I spooned the beans. I'm a Halliburton. Yeah. I'm a celebrated contract worker. I spoon the beans to the kids.
Yeah, it was nice. It was a good job.
Wow. G.I. Joe, I want them beans.
This movie's going to be great, guys. Yeah, I'm really fired up for it.
So good luck.
I believe that's our episode, ladies and gentlemen.
Let me just real quick, because I saw this over the weekend. I was like, oh, my God. Memorial Day.
Yeah, that was
flipping
over the
around.
Weekend.
What better movie to really encapsulate what Memorial Day is about? I watched Taking Chance.
Oh, that's a
it's literally an hour. It's like 75 minutes. It's like an hour 15.
It's an HBO movie.
With
what's it called? Taking Chance.
Chance with Kevin Bacon as a army colonel who escorts a body,
a fallen soldier,
escorts the remains back to.
It's if I'm not mistaken, it's a true story.
It is a true story, which makes it
gut wrenching.
And if you, I tweeted the other day, just said if this is not, you know, required viewing every Memorial Day for everyone, it should be.
It's one of those films that, because when anytime somebody, you know, dies overseas, they have somebody escort the body all the way home.
Yes.
And this kid Chance was from some small town in Wyoming or something like that, and you're seeing. It's based on the memoir or the book or whatever from the guy that escorted him that Kevin Bacon plays, I believe.
Right.
And it is like, I remember that personally because.
I didn't mean to bring the show down, but it was just one of those things that I watched it over the weekend. I was like, oh my God, this is.
It's a great movie. It's a tearjerker for sure because it's real and it happened. And it reminded me personally, and I don't know, maybe you have some of these stories too, Gary, because I know you've been to Iraq and Afghanistan, but. I remember there was a flight the first time I went to Iraq in Thanksgiving of 07 with Scott Kennedy.
You're right.
We, at the end of the, you know, we did 2 weeks and it was, you know, it was a cool tour and everything. We had like a rocket attack, but nothing too crazy. And then we were flying, we're supposed to fly from, you know, Baghdad down to Kuwait, which is about an hour and a half on a C-130. And then we got, they call it fragged, but we got rerouted to Basra to pick up. You know, they go, oh, we got to go pick up HR.
Fragged has multiple meanings
as
well.
Yeah, it does, yeah. but they said, we got to go pick up HR. And we had Tom Watson, some other pro golfers on the tour. And Scott and I just looked at each other and went, oh, man. And they went, what's that? And we're like, that's human remains. And we had to pick up a flag-draped coffin. And we had to get off. They had the whole ceremony loaded on. All the aircraft on the flight line stop.
Yeah.
And they loaded in first, and they're like, you know, you're not allowed to take pictures or any of this kind of stuff. And then we flew all the way to Kuwait, and then it was on our commercial flight to DC. And it was, I remember just going how emotional it was for us. You know, we're crying, these pro golfers are crying. And then to think about the guy that the actual guy that Kevin Bacon played in the film, then had to then deliver the, you know, obviously the family got the news, but then to deliver.
Right. Yeah.
It's just, and you also see the whole actual process.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. There's people who clean mm-hmm. the body. And mm-hmm. then there's the people who make the uniform that's going to go on. Like I said, it was like, if anything, you know, wipe the barbecue sauce off your lip and go in and see this and realize what that whole day is about.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So that's all I needed.
That was good. I'm glad you brought up Taking Chance.
It was
good
really
film.
Great. Taking Chance.
Well, that's our show, guys. So, Gary, where can people find you?
I'm
going to
be with you in Las Vegas.
Vegas, baby. That is, we are working the improv at Harrah's Hotel and Casino in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada, July 14th through the 19th. That'll be a lot of fun. Where else? Or where can people find you online?
You get on Twitter. I'm at Gary_Brightwell because some hump in England has my.
What's that guy doing?
He just shows pictures of his BMW X5. That's all it is. Anyways, but for some reason he has the
does he tape your headshot to them?
Nope. Just some guy in England that's just wastes his Twitter thing.
So if you guys want Beamer shots, go to Gary Brightwell.
Gary_Brightwell. I that you can find me there, and let's just see what the Comedy Film Nerds bump.
Guys,
I'm at 508 followers. Let's see how many.
Give both
I get.
Gary's a Twitter bump.
No, just this one.
Right? Just wait.
I don't want to go down any UK BMW enthusiasts. I'm sorry. I mean, I don't want to take you down a peg, but But start following.
Go underscore.
Go underscore. Go follow Gary underscore Brightwell.
What hashtag. I hope is that, because I sadly call this guy a hump every time I'm on one of these, you know, a podcast. I know at one point somebody, he's going to be actually a fan of some podcast that I'm on. He's going to go, hey, not a hump.
What did I do? Yeah. I have the same name. Yeah. I got to here before you. I
bought your CD.
Excuse me, I had my shit together before you did.
Yeah, sorry. People like my BMW photos.
Yeah. Yeah, why don't you take a picture of your car?
Yeah,
right, exactly.
So follow Gary underscore Brightwell.
We'll see what the comedy film nerd.
Yeah, hashtag underscore work it.
Yeah, hashtag underscore work it. That's how we'll know. Well, cool. Yeah, like I said, I'll be with Gary headlining the Vegas Improv July 14 through 19. But Minneapolis, Minnesota, I am coming to headline the Comedy Corner Underground June 19th and 20th. It's a 74-seat venue. Andy Erickson is opening for me. She's really funny. I've used her in the past. So tickets are going quick. It's $15, but there's no two-drink minimum or anything, so it's a great deal.
Nice.
Yeah, come on out for that. And, of course, Chris and I, can we announce this? We're going to be at Podcast Movement.
Yes.
In Dallas, Texas, July 31st. We're doing a show and then some panels and stuff on August 1st.
On the Saturday. And then we're out.
And then I will be headlining the Improv in Lake Tahoe August 19th through the 23rd. And then headlining the Hollywood Improv Saturday, August 29th. And then, of course, Los Angeles Podcast Festival, September 18th through the 20th.
It's worth it, people.
Yeah, you've come.
Yeah, I
came last year for the first time, and it was well worth it. It's so good.
Sweet.
It's really very good.
Cool. It was a blast, and we're adding bigger and bigger shows this year, guys.
Yes.
The discount hotel rooms are starting to go.
Mm-hmm.
Rooms start as cheap as $199 a night, which is an awesome deal to stay right there in Beverly Hills.
Yep. Yeah.
And we'll be announcing more shows.
Nice hotel.
Very really soon. Great. We're actually out to some offers right now, so we're trying to work that out, and it's going to be a great year.
It's going to be our best lineup yet.
I would easily. Yeah, I would definitely try to attend if you're a listener out there.
Yeah.
Make the trek.
Seriously, you're going to see Doug Loves Movies. You're going to see the Sklar Brothers, Todd Glass, Aisha Tyler, Janet Varney, Mark Maron, W. Cumberbell and Kevin Avery's podcast.
And Thrilling Adventure Hour.
Thrilling Adventure Hour is now in, Never Not Funny.
Mm, it's already a great lineup, and it's going to get better, too. We're going
to
be at a lot.
To get better.
So
sweet.
We wanted to mention a couple other things too. We're going to be getting some new things in the store, so check that out. But also make sure you use the Amazon link. And also, we do an extra every episode too. The guest does like a movie recommendation or tells a story about a movie, and you can only get that if you have the CFN app. And you can get that in the App Store at iTunes, but if you have a Droid device, you can get that on Amazon. But why not go through the affiliate link on our page and get the Amazon app for your Droid, and you can get that bonus extra content for every show.
$1.99.
So yeah, it's only $1.99.
There's a PDF that lists all of the movies we've talked about and what we thought about them.
Yep, and then also there's, like I said, there's extra content where the guest talks about an extra film.
$1.99.
Boom.
And you get the entire back catalog, too. You can get every episode.
It's cheaper than a Viking helmet and a boa.
It is cheaper than a Viking helmet and a boa.
Think about this.
At most places.
If you went to a bar, a beer is $4. This is $1.99, and you get it for forever.
Yeah, and you don't piss this away.
Yeah.
Doesn't get you, you don't have a headache the next day when you use it.
Well, maybe.
Or give you dog breath. Might give
well,
you
won't give you dog breath.
All right, guys.
We'll give you a headache.
Always great doing the show. We love doing it every week, and thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. We also appreciate like you guys on Twitter, on Facebook, and on a little more activity on the message boards. Like you said, we have moderators there. We do have one rule: keep it civil. Be nice to each other. Don't be mean. You know, if you have an opinion, great. If you have a counter opinion, great. But always keep the discussion civil, or the moderators will block you.
Mm-hmm.
So, but
we want
thank
a civil
you.
Action.
We do. We want a civil action on the message boards.
Not a class action on the message boards. We want that's Gene Hackman's message board.
That's Gene Hackman.
You don't want that. All right. Well, thank you guys so much.
No
thank
problem.
You, Gary,
thank
for being
you.
On the show.
Thank you.
Always fun. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.